Amanda Iannucci's Charm Offensive, presented by Amanda Iannucci.
Hello, and welcome back to Charm Offensive, the programme that's an anagram of man's chive offer. And interesting fact this, it was actually chives that Dutch settlers first offered to natives in return for the land that we now know as Dundee. And it's been a week dominated by magnificent sporting highs and lows, all summed up by the new name for Mars Bars, which is Kick Ronaldo in the Face. That spirit certainly caught on because, inspired by David Walliams swimming the English Channel for charity, Wayne Rooney said he's going to be going on a fun run to Lisbon. At least he says it'll be fun. To make the run harder, Wayne Rooney will be carrying in each hand a hammer. And joining me on Charm Offensive this week, please welcome Mark Watson, Simon Evans and Stuart Lee. Okay, so as I said, David Walliams came up with another repulsive Little Britain character this week. A bloke who enjoys swimming through turds towards the French. So, time to ask our panel whether they sponsored themselves to get here, and how did they get on?
Well, this is probably the right moment to explain why I am sitting here this evening in a tub full of baked beans. And, I actually crossed the channel on a raft of poo earlier this week myself. I didn't intend to, just went for a swim off Brighton Beach, but that's how it ended up. Yeah.
I swam across the channel dressed as David Walliams. looking back, it was probably the worst time I could have chosen to do it. It was completely overshadowed by the real David Walliams doing the same thing. So there's hardly any sponsorship or media interest.
I've decided to fly to Calais on the back of a goose while smeared with the grease of David Walliams.
Yeah.
It won't raise any money, but it will raise awareness of that issue.
He used fat that was from a goose that had already been killed for its liver anyway, so it's completely...
Yeah, it's completely, it was completely hygiene. Although, I did watch the goose being killed for its liver and I was aroused whilst that... So that takes the sound edge off it. Difficult to decide if that's the kind of thing that has to be cut, isn't it? Because it doesn't use foul language, but it is an offensive idea.
No. If we keep mentioning goose arousal throughout the show,
no choice.
What about if it's sponsored goose arousal? If everyone here now agrees to give 10p for every mention of goose arousal.
Yeah. If anyone in the audience feels the urge to cough, could they cough like this? Goose arousal!
There's always been a relationship, hasn't there, between comedy character acting and endurance swimming.
This is just the latest.
I think that's a relationship you're about to explore.
No, you'll remember that Dick Emery could famously hold his breath for 4 hours underwater. And that Paul Squire was part squid.
But Dick Emery could only do that after he died.
Yeah.
When he was buried at sea.
Yeah. And whilst blacked up.
To blend in with,
goose arousal.
Ronnie Corbett's going to climb Bruce Forsyth. Look out for that.
Watch your footing on the top, that's my advice.
Well, we'll move on to a round called Bring Me the Eyelid of Cristiano Ronaldo. Referring to the now notorious wink Ronaldo made to his teammates when he persuaded the ref to send off Wayne Rooney. And the extraordinary statement made by Alan Shearer in the BBC's World Cup analysis afterwards, which was that Wayne Rooney should, quote, stick one on him in training. And he didn't mean a kiss. He meant a big, potato-shaped head. So, my question is, were any of you whipped up into a hate-spattered frenzy by this BBC-approved appeal for you to commit violence on another man? Or were you, like me, not rising to this childish bait because you've suddenly realised you're now very Italian?
I haven't seen it yet. I've got it all on video, so don't tell me anything else. I have to keep doing this. I haven't watched the last election yet, so every time someone says the Prime Minister, I have to go, la, la, la.
I'm not interested in football as a sport, so your question that you've asked me is of no interest to me. But what I...
That's a promising tack.
What I, I like the way that they do a lot more coverage now of the managers and the coaches.
Yes.
They like creating a kind of dramatic subplot.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if, particularly managers from developing countries, look, as the team does worse, they have to stand on the touchline gesturing more and saying things like, do what I told you to do before, so that when they get home, they won't be shot in the head by a kind of gambling cartel. And Sven has chosen not to do that. He kind of sits.
He's more mysterious, isn't he?
But that other little bloke who's going to take over.
Yes.
What's he called?
McLaren.
Yeah, he like acts up, doesn't he? He's like making notes and stuff, trying to show you that he could do it really well. If he was allowed.
What's he writing on his
back? I think it's just marking Theo Walcott's homework, isn't he? That was part of the deal.
Should we bring him down now before he's become manager? Should we do that British thing of not even building him up to knock him down, just knock him down?
Yeah.
Knock him down when he's down.
Saves a lot of time, doesn't it? Yeah.
I think immediately his face should be printed in a tabloid newspaper superimposed over a root vegetable. It's never too soon for that to happen.
The question is, which root vegetable?
Yeah, they're running out.
We've had turnip. Have we had carrot?
Well, we had Swede as well, presumably, with Ericsson, although they didn't use it. I don't. No. Maybe it was too obvious. I don't know. It's too easy. It's route one. We're not going to do that. Yeah.
McLaren's not a million miles away from being a beetroot, is he? If you think about it, it's permanently purple.
More of a radish, really. There's a more furious rosy glow rather than a deep burgundy hue, I would say. It sounds like I've overly studied the root vegetables.
Yeah. We're now sorting out the men from the boys in terms of who's got an allotment and who's just bluffing.
This is the kind of football conversation. I live in fear of being asked by barbers or cab drivers for opinions about football. But to find myself here on Radio 4 saying, which root vegetable most resembles the future manager of England? Yes. I can cope with that. And in fact, next time a cab driver turns around to me and says, what do you think of the game tonight? I'll go, I don't know, but I think McLaren is like a carrot.
I think when he said, when the Shearer said stick one on him, they may have been a completely innocent suggestion that he play in goal next time around because he's a bit of a diver.
All right, so legally it wasn't...
Yeah, or maybe stick one on him would be a little rosette saying, I cheated at the World Cup. Yeah. You know,
I think Lineker, Gary Lineker would never have allowed it a few years ago. I think he's got a lot nastier, Lineker.
Lineker was a moral footballer, but an immoral man.
No, he wasn't a very moral footballer. He was a goal hanger, wasn't he, really?
Well, I think he was never booked. He was never booked in his career.
I've never been booked whilst playing for England either. I mean,
I think Lineker was a sinister figure because he chose to advertise crisps. Mm. And, you know, we now know from the scientific breakthroughs that have been made in the last few years that crisps are actually bad for children. They make them fat. That can lead.
There was no way we could have known
Lineker
that.
Lineker was a helpless pawn.
But Lineker chose to.
He was at that time when Chris were regarded as being one of the five major food groups.
I know,
Okay, well, as I mentioned earlier, I managed to get over any national disappointment by suddenly remembering I was Italian. And throughout the show, I'll be getting in touch with my Italian roots. Listeners at home will hear what that sounds like, because it will go something like this. Whenever you hear that sound, it'll indicate that we've gone all Italian. And you'll know that we've taken the roof off the studio, we're sitting outside in a piazza, enjoying a coffee and a cappuccino, just letting the day...
And a cappuccino, you are enormously Italian, aren't you?
Oh, yes. For that, you need this. This is great, I've got this machine here, it's a pad thing.
Everyone who's Italian gets given one of these at birth.
Yeah. All sorts of buttons on it. I feel like a sort of comical Stephen Hawking. I can just... I can press. Listen to that.
These all appear to be variations on the theme from El Dorado.
So we'll be having little Italian moments where we want to carry on the discussion, but in a slightly Italian way, sort of setting up, let the day drift by, where we sit and watch small town corruption. I've got some Italian delicacies with me here as well, which we're going to circulate as well. Just a little part of the show that whenever the Italian music comes on, we've got... basically, it's just bits of raw meat, but it's prosciutto salamis. And,
it's in this really hot night, on this really hot studio, what I really wanted was a plate of sweating raw meat. Can people see that? There's a piece of transparent sausage meat here. I'm going to wear.
It comes with a transparent pig.
It's a slice of David Walliams. Now then, Scotland. I used to be Scottish before I became very Italian. How I miss that country, a land of misty rivers flowing in broth and whose national dress is Scotch tape. country that invented television in batter, and who's now the subject of a quaint racist attack by David Cameron, who suggested this week that Scottish MPs shouldn't vote on legislation that affects just England. So, la mia charm offensive amici, where do you stand on how this lovely, forgotten little land should be treated?
Well, I agree with him. What do you think of that? I think that the English should only vote on Scottish matters and that the Scottish should only vote on English matters. Yeah. And it would be like mutually assured destruction. And then, you know, if the English tried to pass a law saying that all Scottish people should have a picture of Admiral Nelson tattooed on their face,
yes,
then the Scots could say, yeah, and then you're going to have to only eat Scottish food. And there would be like a balance, like Solomon and the baby.
Yes.
It'd be a bit like the day they had for Comic Relief once where people swapped jobs.
Mm. Yes.
Did that happen or did I dream it? I dreamt it. What an idea, though.
Well, what I don't understand is what it means by that Scots should not be allowed to vote on matters that concern only the English. Mm. What are matters that concern only the English? I'm asking you, as
England.
A Scot.
No, I'm not.
It's a very good point.
I was just curious.
It's a very good point. What would make it better is just a little drizzle of olive oil.
You know, like a Scotch egg, right? What's
yes.
that?
Yes.
What is a Scotch egg? You're Scottish. What is a Scotch egg?
It's an egg encased in a sort of Chernobyl-esque concrete arrangement of flour and some orange stuff.
So what's the deal?
I'm not sure is the answer. I really do not know.
It's an egg in sausage meat.
Oh, right? Is that what it is?
Basically.
My God, that's disgusting.
I know. They thought, an egg on its own, that's not nice enough. Cover it in sausage meat and batter. Then it would be a delicacy. But what I want to know is, does batter and sausage meat define something as being Scottish? If that is the case, then what is the Scottish Parliament? Is that like an ordinary Parliament, like ours, the best one, but encased in sausage meat and batter?
This is the difference between the word Scottish and the word Scotch, and the Scottish people get quite upset if you call them Scotch, and that's why. It's because you're saying that they're encased in batter and sausage meat. Yeah.
Also, that's what gives the whiskey its unique taste.
Absolutely. A bit peaty. I'm getting a little bit of flint and a huge mouthful of rancid sausage meat.
So Sean Connery is a sort of Roger Moore in batter.
Only in hindsight, obviously.
Only in hindsight, yeah. A retrospective battered Roger Moore, if you will.
And yet, ironically, he was the best James Bond, exactly. Despite that handicap.
Well, those...
I think, you know, like in Wales, you have road signs in two languages. Mm. I think they should have that in Scotland, because if you grow up in Scotland, there's two things you're taught. One is, we'll never get through to the World Cup, and the other is, how to do Sean Connery. Right. Which is, you know, so you have great games playing, you know, what's Sean Connery's favourite actress? Shishi Spacek. And, you know, what's his favourite poet? Siegfried Sassoon. And I think you should have...
Those days must have flown by. Yeah.
I think you should have road signs in Scotland that give the speed limits in English, 60, and Sean, 60. You know, 60.
The trouble is we've sort of paused halfway through a devolutionary process, haven't we? We're like a stegosaurus now, which had a proper brain in its head and then another smaller brain in its arse, just for waggling its tail with, and that's roughly what we have. Administratively speaking now, isn't it, in this country?
Time out here. Are you... I'm just doing that to calm everyone down. Are you equating the Scottish Parliament, which...
I leave it to your audience to decide which brain is which.
Well, we then come on to the vexed constitutional question of what this country should be called. Mm. Because I think this is the only country, I think, in the world that doesn't know what it's called. Is it the United Kingdom? Is it Great Britain? Is it the UK? Is it England? Is it the British Isles? I think we should settle this matter once and for all through proper constitutional channels, which is...
Tesco. How about that?
Call it Tesco.
Tesco, yeah. Just be done with it.
I think it should be called Poundland.
The United States of Dame Judi Dench.
What am I just going to get the name of a person? Oh, you could have got Ian Harris. Yeah. You thought in Britain, Ian Harris, and in the United Nations, it would be addressed as Mr. Harris.
But who could call us Ian? Almost no one in the world.
Well, but wouldn't it split up into wooden bits of it? Want to be maybe. Called Ian, and the other bits want to be called Harris, and Ian would support any team that isn't Harris.
The usual fragmentation would occur.
Friendly states would call us Harrow, or the Hameister, or something.
Okay, to help resolve this matter of what on earth we're called, I'm going to ask the Charm Offensive audience to come up with a name for this country. Now, in the past, this island race has had its land's name determined by the confluence of two millennia of history, but today, could we keep it to 10 minutes? So in 10 minutes, we'll read out the best titles and vote on a winner.
Which country are they going to name, though? England, or the UK, or the British Isles, or Great Britain?
Pull at that thread and the whole world unravels. Okay. Well, they're all deciding our fate. We're going to hurriedly push on to a round called I'm Going to Have to Hurry You, I'm John Humphreys. And I need to go to the toilet. And it's concerned with being left behind. Are you behind three series of 24 and all 10 assistants of Doctor Who? Have you managed to catch up on all the West Wings, or are you still back at the series where they had Lincoln? In our age of more and more things to watch, are you, like me, behind on absolutely everything so that in the end you will end up lapping yourself? Mark, are you behind?
I'm hugely... Well, I've already said that I haven't been able to watch any of the elections. I've got those backed up. I've actually got the whole of TV in a box set ready to watch. And it's just a question of... So I've never been able to... I think everyone... that you know, like Reading Week at university? Yes. I think there should be a national period where... we don't have to do anything else. We're all allowed to just catch up on things we haven't seen. And maybe you could have a test at the end of it, but just 6 weeks or something. I don't want to see the economy crippled, but if we just set aside 6 weeks...
I've actually yearned... Do you ever yearn to commit a small crime, you know, so no one is hurt? But it's serious enough to go to something like an open prison for about 6 months.
Yeah.
Because then I could just take lots of books.
It'd be great.
Computer fraud or something. You know, insurance.
We've all fantasised about a year banged up.
Yes. With Jonathan Aitken.
These days, the prisons are like 5-star hotels.
You might find the library doesn't run to all the ladies' box sets. That would be really frustrating if you then were watching...
They don't take box sets off you when you go into prison, do they? They're one of the things that you're allowed to take in.
I was kind of... What disappoints me is that I haven't seen, like, loads of classic HBO series. I haven't watched all three of The Godfather or Citizen Kane or whatever. But due to a mixture of mild alcoholism and insomnia and what gets on TV late at night when you're awake, I have seen the Lewis Collins films Who Dares Wins 8 times. So I kind of, that is time I'll never get back.
No. Yeah. Do you want that time back? Do you feel resentful of what Lewis...
I do. Collins... I resent Lewis Collins personally for it. And I've written to him asking how he's going to reimburse me. He stayed strangely silent on the subject of that. But it does make you think. When you think, I've watched that 8 times, all these things I haven't seen. Mm-hmm. Where did all the time go? Where did it go? And how did I come... To be 38 here tonight, and all these things have passed, and I don't know what they are, and I don't know about football. I don't know what the East Lothian question is, but there are people in this room that want my opinions about things. I'm being asked these questions.
This is called a midlife crisis, everyone.
I don't know how it came to be here.
Would you like some ciabatta? To get back to the topic in hand, which was wasting our time.
Yes.
Leibniz, have you heard of him?
Leibniz.
I read it reading years ago. He was the last man who knew everything. He was up to speed on everything.
Oh, Leibniz knew everything?
Yeah, apparently. And invented calculus as well.
I think he could invent a great many things if he knew everything. He should have given us something like an easy way to peel orange or something. What about those people you can text 63336 and they do claim to know everything? They can't answer any question.
Yeah. Have you ever done that? I did that.
I have done it, yeah.
What was the last thing you asked them?
I asked them the whereabouts of an Italian restaurant, a specific restaurant that I was looking for. And they... Hey! And to be fair, they did know it, so I assume they probably do know everything else.
Oh, Sunday. last Sunday.
Perfectly reasonable sample size.
Last Sunday, I was in a pub garden in the Cotswolds, and I texted those people to ask them which year the BBC stopped broadcasting the Black and White Minstrel Show, which has come up in an argument. I was insisting it was 1982, and I was very wrong.
Aren't they just some people with a computer and they Google it?
I think they probably are.
It's that guy. He's still around.
I I texted them, who is Leibniz? And they gave me the address of an Italian restaurant.
It might be they just used that answer every time, and I was extremely lucky. Yeah.
But the interesting thing about that is that at the end of a phone line, there is a man or a woman claiming...
These days...
Why is she not doing the ironing?
I don't know.
Same time. She's multitasking. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very...
I once asked a bigger question. I asked them in which year of human history most people died.
Oh, yes.
I thought maybe it would just be last year because it's always, you know, the population's always... Yeah. But I wasn't sure because there's been some awful years. And...
I think they thought it was vaguely sinister that you would ring up and ask that. I mean, they'd probably normally get people asking them trivia, and you've asked them, which year did most people die in? If you'd texted me saying, which year did most people die in, I'd text back and go, why do you ask?
Yeah, it's funny, actually. I did text a few people first, and no one was very forthcoming on the subject.
I've got to say, though, the black and white minstrel shows must have set a few alarm bells ringing, must it? Are you thinking, is it too late for a comeback?
Okay, well, in order to save time catching up on all the celebrity gossip that we have to read now, if we ever want to sound normal, we go over now to our ace celebrity gossip spotter, Vaughan Savage, who's been out celebrity gossip spotting acely for a section called Condense Celebrity Gossip News.
Guess what? Michael Parkinson spends his holidays working as a mercenary in the Congo. Ah... Mariah Carey demands a baby llama as part of her backstage rider so she can slit its stomach open and sleep inside it. Cool. Tom Jones sweats gravy. Yipes. Davina McCall has four spare voice boxes grown on the back of an unnamed mouse. Her tongues are being farmed in horses. Weird. Strictly Come Dancing's Bruce Forsyth's hair is real, but the rest of him is a wig. Dr. Fox isn't a real doctor, he's a git. Ooh. Eminem has bought a middle-aged Christian woman installed in his bedroom to shock first thing every morning. Heiress Paris Hilton and BBC Breakfast presenter Bill Turnbull have finally made their romance public. They were spotted on Tuesday smooching in Halfords in Wellingarden City. Bill picked up a bicycle pump and playfully blew Paris's hair around with it. It really looked like love was in the air. Guess what? Chris Moyles is gay. He regularly goes to gay nightclubs, meets other gay men, and has anonymous gay sexual encounters. By which I mean, of course, he's rubbish.
Okay, the next round's called History. Never heard of it. I was too young. And it's inspired by a campaign launched this week by Michael Palin and Stephen Fry and historians like David Starkey to encourage schools to spend more time studying history in a campaign called Make History, Not History. So, having arrived at this present moment in history, do our panel feel that history matters?
Well, I think we have to be suspicious of history, because history is written by the winners. For example, I was in Sweden about 2 weeks ago, and I went to this place called Viking Island, and the guides were explaining in what they imagined was good English, but actually sounded like MTV presenters. They were explaining that the Vikings, they didn't. All we know about Vikings is from Christian anti-Viking propaganda. So the Vikings never had helmets with horns on them. They also never pillaged anywhere, and they didn't do any raping either. That was exaggerated.
Oh, right. Mm.
But they did touch a nun's leg in Lindisfarne. From that, the whole myth of the Vikings, right, as we understand it, grew up.
What is pillaging? How do you pillage?
What makes it different from just burgling? Well, pillaging is a mixture of burglary and tilling the soil.
Right.
And basically it's stealing...
Burglary on horseback, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's stealing nutrients from the soil using a kind of very long hoe. Yeah. Then they would take those nutrients back to Sweden and grow all the rich produce that Sweden's famous for.
So pillaging's quite a good thing.
Yes, it was.
It should be more of it in Gardener's World.
It wasn't so much theft as just the movement around of soil.
Yeah.
Gardener's World started off being called Titchmarsh's Pillaging Hour. Is anyone else really disappointed to hear that Vikings didn't do any of the things that we've always... normally, if you hear a story of rape is not true, you're not disappointed. But in this case, I feel... Yes. I mean, if you were to go to a fancy dress party as a Viking, what would you do now?
Well...
it may happen.
A nice Swedish bloke just moving soil around.
Just go as a conscientious gardener. That's no... It's much harder to convey with a fancy dress.
But those are the challenges that aficionados of fancy dress have to rise to. Especially as new information becomes available.
I suppose so.
What you have to understand about fancy dress, Mark, is that it's not static. It moves with the times.
There is indeed a whole history of fancy dress that runs in parallel to the dress that it's being fancy about.
Waiting to be uncovered, The problem with you, Mark, is you're a fancy dress purist. You want to draw a line in the sand and say that's what those costumes are.
Well, if someone says, oh, I'm a cowboy, I don't think it's unreasonable, they should have a hat. You'll probably tell me next they didn't have hats.
They didn't have hats, no.
Unbelievable.
Interesting fact, they were scared of cows.
Yeah.
So what will be remembered like from this era now?
I think what will be remembered by the sounds of it is Michael Palin and Stephen Fry. If they're the ones who are reforming the history syllabus, then it's all going to be about them. History lessons will be things like, once there was a man called Michael who went to all sorts of countries and was very well-mannered wherever he went. And released an extraordinary series of DVDs on the subject.
A man at the gym I go to knows Michael Palin's postman, and Michael Palin's postman says he's a really horrible bloke.
I don't...
It's true. How would he know? Does he accept his post in a hostile way?
Because Michael Palin's postman doesn't like Michael Palin, because Michael Palin's postman knows that Michael Palin is so popular that so much mail is sent to Michael Palin that Michael Palin's postman is very, very hardworking.
Yeah, that might be it.
I've never heard Michael Palin said so many times.
Well, he's always going to be not there, and he'll be ringing the doorbell with something he can't quite get through.
They'll just be piling up, because he's gone for 6 months around the Andes.
The irony is... The irony is Michael Palin speaks very highly of his postman.
Shall we find out what this country's called?
Yeah.
We're going to actually make actual history here, because this is going to be definitive somehow. So we need to collect in the bits of paper. Well, the paper's been collected in. Does anybody want any of this very, very hot cheese? Yep. Okay.
Thank you.
This one here. That strange sense of disappointment felt when visiting a National Trust property land.
Euro car park.
West of Wales. It should be east of Wales, shouldn't it?
UK.co.uk.
Mark, have you got anything there?
I don't think I've necessarily got the cream of the crop here. Boner land, for example.
But the Independent Republic of the Quaint.
And my favourite, actually, so far, which is An Audience with Guernsey. There you are. On that happy note, we leave you with this An Audience with Guernsey-ish audience. And we've just heard that J.K. Rowling has said Harry Potter will be killed in the final book by a grumbling postman with a sack full of hardbacks. Goodbye.
That was Amanda Iannucci's Charm Offensive, presented by Amanda Iannucci. The guests this week were Mark Watson, Simon Evans and Stuart Lee. It was written by Amanda Iannucci and John Holmes, Will Smith, Ian Martin, Nick Doody and Sean Gray. And the producer was David Tyler. The programme was a positive production for the BBC.